topic now will be electricity. Electricity is a term which comes out of the Cat Weasel television series from England a long time ago. Basically a wizard of the past ending up in the future and discovering that there's this strange stuff which people call electricity, and for him it was evident it was electricity. And I like the word because electricity is so much more than people think, and also sometimes so much different than people think. So I'd like to explore a couple of thoughts about electricity, which is electromagnetism and actually radio, electromagnetic radio information fields. And that involves so much that I'll have a selection of different ideas. And I would like to start with the notion that in this case it might be wise to focus on the toxicity of electromagnetic fields, because that is at the moment all too often be ignored for commercial and military reasons. But in order to be able to understand the toxicity of electromagnetic and information fields, it is necessary to first have a bit of an understanding what electromagnetism is, which is a difficulty in itself, because essentially it is very abstract. The models are in fact confusing if you look at them in detail. And the interpretations of the models actually are misrepresentations of what happens. So that's also where the word electricity comes into play, because there are tricks being played on the models of electromagnetism. And you can also see that in the difference in a way electricity is looked at in physics, in mathematics, or in computer technology, or in electrical power energy systems. So let me start with a basic notion of what electricity is, and that essentially also means that we need to come to understand that we are dealing with an abstraction. Let me start with the origin of the technology and science of electricity. This was based on the combined work of Faraday and Maxwell. Faraday was an experimenter, a researcher. He is very famous for his work on using compass and electric needles, wires, mercury bath, and having needles swirl around a pivot in the middle to show that with an electrical current the needle would move around in circles. His work is fascinating, and please look at whatever films you can find about what he did and how he did it. It is fundamental, because that is where you can see that electricity is a wave field, that it has to do with flows, linear flows and circular flows. I'll come back to it later when I talk about tetrionics. And his model, circular flows and linear flows, were also known in the flows of water and the flows in pipelines, the forms of hurricanes and other things. So there is also a large amount of mathematics which addresses these kind of flow forms. And in essence, all of the mathematical description of differential equations are at that level of describing relationship and change. And depending on how you look at it, if you look from one point perspective and things seem linear, or you look at another perspective and you see that things repeat themselves, then they are circular, then you would use different mathematical models, which are essentially those of linear flow and circular flow in combinations. That is what Faraday saw and showed. But that was also what Maxwell was able to describe. Maxwell also was a clever dude. He, at a very early age, started to use mathematics to describe relationships of planets, movements in nature, and so on. And at some point, he was able to look at those findings of Faraday, the linear flows, the circular flows, and the kind of relationship pattern between them. And Maxwell was able to describe that in a very specific form of differential equations. Differential equations, Leibniz, Newton, developed that. And essentially, they were looking at what happens when you walk down a road and you go from, say, London to Oxford, and you start the clock when you're in London, you stop the clock then when you're in Oxford, and then you know what distance you covered in how much time. But they also realized that if you look in it more detail, if you clock what happens when you go up the bridge and what happens when you go down the bridge, then you could actually see that going up the bridge takes longer, going down the bridge is faster. And by comparing this in the mathematics, in what's called differential, what is the difference in space and time about the distance you walked and the time that it took, you can come up with detailed description of what the difference is between going up and down the bridge, and that is the basis of the mathematics of differential equations. These differential equations don't only relate distance and time, but they can also be used to compare or connect to each other. And that is where Hamilton, a mathematician, came into the story, because he created a set of differential equations using four elements. In a way, it was a story of alchemy, but in a new jacket. And he was able to show that when you use those four elements in combination, you are able to describe complexities which are more encompassing in a simpler manner. It is a bit like the difference between eating with a toothpick or eating with a fork. With a toothpick or a chopstick, whatever you pick up with a single chopstick will start to rotate about what you're picking up. What you pick up starts to rotate around the chopstick or the toothpick. And with a fork, you can actually direct it. And in that sense, the Hamiltonian mathematics has more prongs to its fork, and you can pick up things differently. And that's the kind of mathematics which Maxwell used. And in doing so, was able to describe what Faraday had found. Now, it turns out that some people have difficulty with understanding what Hamilton was dealing with, what he was trying to describe, this complexity of relationship with four dimensions. And so when Heaviside looked at the equations of Maxwell, he basically simplified them. He got rid of those Hamiltonian notations, brought it back to vector notation. So basically he went from four dimensions to two dimensions. And of course, if you lose dimension, you have a kind of dementia that gets into the picture. You lose information, and in that sense, the equations which normally are being used in electromagnetic studies, the so-called Heaviside notation equations, they are neat, they're simple, they're effective, they're practical, but they miss part of the story. So it is necessary to understand that what Faraday was looking at and what Maxwell was able to describe is different from what Heaviside made of it and how the textbooks of electromagnetism now deal with them. This is where I would like to change the angle of the camera and go away from this model of electromagnetism as it is now customarily used. There's a lot that you can find of it. There's extensive descriptions on it, and most of it is based on those Heaviside equations, which work well but are not complete. And then I would like to switch the camera to the perspective of tetrionics, which is an amazingly logical and simple model at the quantum level. But before I do so, there are a couple of important people I need to refer to, I think, because they showed that we need to think about electricity and magnetism in a different manner. And I think the most important researcher at that level is Nikola Tesla. You could say that one-handedly he created a whole modern technology of electromagnetism. Although people point at Edison and point at Marconi as really important people in that realm of electromagnetism and communication, Nikola Tesla, who has remained unknown, but fortunately he's getting to be more and more well known, already realized that when you work with electricity, there are other things that come into the picture. And Tom Bearden is one of the people to look at his work too, because he understood how different Tesla's understanding was of that of Edison. You could say that Tesla was working with alternating current and Edison was working with direct current, but there's much more to it. Because with the direct current you have a linear model, with alternating current you have a circular model. So you're actually working with different dimensions. And Tom Bearden realized that those differences in dimensions between one-dimensional and two-dimensional actually means that you are having an extra dimensional characteristic come in, and that there are radiant field effects that need to be addressed, because around electrical devices, and specifically by the interaction of electrical devices, there are, say, waves upon waves, like wave beats in music, or Doppler effects in sound shifts, which are important for what happens in the electromagnetic field. Bill Tiller is one of the people who also realized that, and who looked into the way that electromagnetic devices and electromagnetic fields interact, and that around electromagnetic devices there is an electromagnetic field which is different from the electromagnetic field of the universe as a whole and the environment. He also realized that many electromagnetic devices in a way create a scar tissue in the electromagnetic field, and you need to interpret that as literally a kind of wound in the electromagnetic field. So Bill Tiller started to look at the relationship between the electric field and the magnetic field, which is normally portrayed as a sine wave and another sine wave, which are at right angles to each other. And these two sine waves combine, the electric wave and the magnetic wave, very nicely described by these equations of Maxwell, and even very neatly approximated by the Heaviside notation for that. These electric waves and magnetic waves are assumed to be interlocked, as a result of which the crossing point, the zero transition point of the electric sine wave and the crossing point of the magnetic sine wave are assumed to be in the same spot. And I was very much helped in a conversation with Bill Tiller when he said, well, actually you need to realize that the closer that you get to the zero point, the more important the difference between the transition of the electrical and the magnetic through that zero point becomes. And what he implied by saying that was, the more you go from the wave to the crossing point, the more you are moving from energy to information. And actually he created the Taylor-Einstein equation, in which he looked what happened in that zero-point transition, accounting for the fact that there can be minute shifts at that zero-point, so that that zero-point can actually sort of hover around the ideal zero-point of the equations, but that as a result there is a difference between what the wave would be and what the wave actually is, and that essentially you could see as the wheeling or the needling, where the electric wave and the magnetic wave start to go out of phase, which is to say the foundation of that kind of wound or scar tissue that you can then have around electromagnetic devices. In the Taylor-Einstein equation, he actually looks at what happens when you go into that zero point. By the Einstein equation, the more you go towards the speed of light, the more energy you need to invest into it. But by looking at that zero point, Bill Taylor could show that once you actually go through that barrier of light, then on the other side of it, all of the energy you invested into it will come out of it. And by some other theories, you can understand that the model of Einstein is incomplete, because of course he assumes that the barrier of light is infinitely thin, and by the model of Max Planck there is a quantum distance and a quantum speed which involved, which means that the barrier of light is not infinitely thin but actually has a distance. You need to account for that, and then the story is not an integration to infinity but integration to the quantum distance, and that's where the Taylor-Einstein equation then becomes quite practical. In fact, to complete the story, Bill Taylor, he had the help of some other people in making a kind of oscillators by which electromagnetic fields can be bounced back to a device, as a result of which the scar tissue around the electromagnetic field can be healed. You can in a way compare that to the way some expensive cars use a microphone in the engine connected to a loudspeaker in the engine, in which they use reverse sound to dampen the sound of the engine. So when the engine makes a bang, the loudspeaker goes back and sucks it up, and when the loudspeaker goes back out, it sort of goes back into a void or where the bang just was. This is a well-known technique which can then also be applied at the electromagnetic level, and I met Joey Hall, who was involved with the creation and production of these devices, which were designed by Bill Taylor with others, and he had discovered that when they use these devices around computers, the computers had less errors because this interaction of their local field with environmental field was dampened. So they had less, say, electronic shrieking noise around them. And as a consequence, they could move more smoothly in the electromagnetic field and through the electromagnetic field. And it wasn't just that the computers worked better, but that the sysop, the system operator of the computer, was less sick, has less conflict with his wife at home, and people around it became more healthy as well. And that was then developed and marketed as what's called a Q-chip, which is basically an antenna loop connected to a chip, which inverts the wave field and bounces it back, as a result of which moments of uncertainty in the system can be resolved. So there is a very nice understanding of how devices and electromagnetic fields interact. And Bill Tiller used the kind of understanding which Nikola Tesla applied and which Tom Bearden also described in another way. And let me mention somebody else, Joseph Farrell. That's somebody who studied patrism, which is different, the differences between belief system, and as a result he also started to study different approaches in science. And he realized that this technology which Tesla has explored, developed, described, demonstrated, has been used in many old cultures. So he has a very nice description in which he elaborates on the work of Christopher Dunn, who looked at the pyramids and said, actually the pyramid is an oscillator. It is like a crystal, as it is used in some of the watches, just a couple of sizes larger. Within it, it has a corridor, which is like an organ pipe or a flute. Actually, from the corridor, you can see that it has the characteristics of what's called a Helmholtz oscillator, which is a tunable resonator. And he also discovered that within the pyramid, this is called the Pyramid of Cheops, as it's called, there is a little chamber where apparently they were able to split water into oxygen and hydrogen using electricity. And they combined that with these wave tuning that they could do within the pyramid. And there are some other stories where Joseph Farrell points out from other cultures where they said that these vibrations in the pyramid were combined with crystals so that they could actually bridge the distance between the very high frequencies and the very low frequencies and made a tunable oscillator. As a result, they were then able to project energy at a large distance. His story is very interesting. Let me just show a different approach to that same notion or concept, which is the work of Michel Essaidi, a nuclear physicist trained in Moscow and working for Philips in the design of the magnetic resonance devices. And after his work there, he started to turn that principle around. With a magnetic resonance imaging device, people are moved in an electromagnetic field. The field with a large electromagnetic force is used to trigger a release of, say, electroatomic dynamic in the body, as a result of which the body starts to radiate out a scatter pattern of that electromagnetic field, which is triggered by that magnetic imaging device. If you turn that around, then you can create a room in the walls of which you can put crystals and electromagnetic coils, as a result of which this wall becomes a kind of electromagnetic resonator or oscillator. And that can be used then to give the same kind of feedback to the body in a different way as what I just described for this Q-chip as created by Bill Tiller with Joey Hall. In this chamber created by Michel Essaidi, and his project is called Aqua Tilis. That room functions as a kind of womb for a kind of electromagnetic menstruation effect. He uses the crystals in the wall, but he also uses etheric oils, which are a molecular resonator at the infrared level. He also uses ferns, which are, let's say, antennae at the biological level. And by doing so, that chamber is able to absorb and reflect and transform frequencies, and then added to that an ionospheric charged mist in that chamber, like a bit of a sauna, he could create a plus 6-volt ambient environment, which around the body then pulls out free radical electrons, which then can be washed out, and he used that to get rid of the kind of chemicals as are used in chemotherapy. I said that the body can be cleansed, as he said, it's like a menstrual process of the cleansing of the body, but using the electromagnetic principles. So I spoke about the equations of the electromagnetic dynamics. I gave a couple of examples of the way electromagnetic fields and information fields have been studied and used. And now I'd like to shift the camera to this model of tetrionics, which I've discussed elsewhere. So I'm just going to bring it into a compact understanding for the purpose of this talk. Tetrionics is based on the model of a radio diagram. The radio diagram is normally represented as a square with four sides. One of them is the icon of a switch, one is the resistor, one is the coil, one is the capacitor. And essentially those are schematic diagrams for the four elements of alchemy. That there is a switch, that there is an energy transformer, that is a time transformer, and that is a space storage device, which essentially means that this radio diagram operates in four dimensions. But as people will know, the radio diagram, it is the core of, as the name already implies, the design of radio, of television, of computer, and in fact all electronic devices. The understanding of radio diagrams is really fundamentally important, and actually it would have been really neat if people started to learn that in kindergarten, because it's something you can actually play with, and a nice aspect of these radio diagrams is that what you draw, you actually already calculate. And it is that quality of drawing is calculation, which is at the core of tetrionics. The creator of tetrionics, Galvin Abraham, understood radio diagrams very well, and at some moment he had a kind of mental short circuit in which he realized that the radio diagram could be represented in the form of an equilateral triangle rather than as a square. From that 6 years of work, he developed the notion that this equilateral triangle can actually represent the quality of a quantum, and that fields of triangles can then represent electromagnetic fields. Tetrionics has a very clear, elegant, graceful description and beautiful pictures of the way these tetrions form photons, all two-dimensional. They can form bosons, again two-dimensional, larger clusters of triangles, and they can form electromagnetic fields, still all in two dimensions, which can interact with each other and can have all kind of dynamics. And essentially they are a phase field of quanta in formation. So they're literally an information field, but because of the distribution of the quanta in that field, it is also the foundation in what physics would call a statistical distribution. So at the most fundamental level, the quantum field already has the qualities and characteristics which science had measured at much larger levels. These quanta can also form tetrions, basically clusters of four quanta. They are fixed structure, they are surface charged, they are inert, and they are the foundation of matter. All forms of matter is formed only by the clustering of these tetrions. The tetrions can cluster because they are surface charged, so a plus surface can connect to a minus minus surface, what's called a strong force. The rib of one of the tetrahedra, which is plus charged rib, can connect to a minus charged rib, so these ribs of the tetrahedra can also connect in what's called the weak force. A plus charged tetrion can connect to a minus charged tetrion at the tip, which is called the derived force. But all of these combinations then simply lead to the clustering of these tetrions in forming matter in very complex manners. The clustering of these tetrions takes place because there are two forms of interaction between the quantum field, that flat field of tetrions, of quanta, interacting with the three-dimensional tetrions. One form is that the field flows past the tetrions and can drag them along if the charge is correct, or can move them in other ways depending on the speed, the frequencies, and so on. And those are the linear fields by which displacement can take place and by which energy can be added or subtracted from a cluster of tetrions. The other form of dynamic of the electromagnetic quantum field in interaction with these tetrions, the basic form of matter, is that they can flow around them or circulate between them. And that circulatory flow is what people would call energy, the stored capacity of the quantum field within it. So there we then have a different understanding of the foundation of the universe, because suddenly the foundation of the universe is an electromagnetic field of quanta, which have a plus charge on the one side and minus charge on the other side. They can flip over, which is then called a quantum change. They can form fields, and those fields will interact with the tetrions of matter. And then, by tetrionics, the universe is essentially composed of an underlying electromagnetic field in two dimensions, which is not physical, but very much physical. It is all based on phase changes of the plus and minus charge of the quantum in different patterns of formation. And those quantum fields then interact with these tetrions, which are the foundation of matter. So when we look at it from that perspective, we can look again at what Faraday was experimenting and what Maxwell was describing. And at that level, we can see that there are essentially linear flows and circular flows in that electromagnetic field, and those in combination determine the movements and the dynamic and the clustering and unclustering of matter in the forming of the universe. Now let's shift the camera again, because we are all connected to that. Because in our body, cells operate with that electromagnetic field. Cells operate with these tetrions, these clusters of matter. And cells are actually able to operate on atoms, and regard operation here as a surgical kind of activity. With the linear flow and with the circular flow, they can cut between atoms and they can move atoms around. So the cells are able to reorganize atoms, which they need to do in forming of molecules. So the cells are able to cut molecules, to splice and slice them. They're able to slice and splice atoms. And in the cells, there is a whole dynamic of what I prefer to call the atomolecular dynamic, in which cells juggle between atoms and molecules. And when I talk about atom and molecules, I definitely think of the atoms and the molecules in the sense as they have been described in tetrionics. It is a story in itself. It adds a simplicity to the understanding of how matter is formed and how matter is transformed, and specifically in the cells. You can then see that the cells must, by definition, be able to work with linear flows and circular flows of the electromagnetic quantum field. And in doing so, they can reorchestrate atoms to form molecules of different kinds. They can actually reposition molecules in the body in very precise manners, and not just as seen in the bone, where the trabeculae are these gothic arches of the calcified structures, which are deposited in exactly the form of the electromagnetic flow lines as they exist within the bone. And at that level, you can see that within our body, the cells have created materials and organized materials in accordance to these principles of the electromagnetic fields. The body materials are piezoelectric, which means that if you put pressure on them, electricity can come out, and the other way around. The body materials are liquid crystal, which means that if the electrical field changes, the molecules go from a bound structure to an oscillating structure. They go from a crystal to liquid. The materials are a transistor, which is also called transducer transponder, which means that a change of the electromagnetic field, or a change of information in the material, will change the flow of the electricity in the material. The motherboard of the body materials changes by the electromagnetic field. The flow goes one way instead of the other. So the software, the electromagnetic field, can actually change the hardware and thereby change the flow in the body materials. All of that is part of the cell communication. The fourth form of matter is the intelligent gel, where the information and the matter are so connected that the material can actually fall apart, but with the change of the electromagnetic field, it will retake the form of the information which was stored in it. So at that level, you could say that all of the body materials are storage devices. So the memories, the transistors, the flow directions, and the storage are all part of that story. So in that sense, you can say that the body materials are the equivalent of these four components of the radio diagram. That means that we have to think about the body in a different manner. It is not about the body anatomy, because the body anatomy is simply that whole cluster of molecules as it has been created by the living body cells, and as they have been deposited by the living cells to optimize the communication of the cells. So the body anatomy is merely, let's say, the fountain as it is formed by the flow of the water. If you cut the flow of the water, then the fountain will collapse. If you cut life, then the body will collapse. So it is not the form of the fountain that we need to look at, but it is the flow of the water in the fountain that we need to look at, and that's called the physiology. The physiology is actually the communication between the cells, which takes place at four levels. It is physical, it's chemical, it's electromagnetic, and it's photonic. And if you look at the same at the molecular level, the physical part is the proteins, the chemical part is the enzymes, the electromagnetic part is the hormones, and the photonic part is the pigments. All of the molecules in the cellular communication are thereby interactive with this electromagnetic field, which means that, just as I described before, for this work of Bill Tiller and the kind of work that was described by Joseph Farrell, there is this interaction between matter and the electromagnetic field, but it is a two-way thing. It is not as people in the West now think that you create a computer and that it will do what you say, as if it's a kind of Roman slave, but it's rather the other way, that the body actually used the information to form the material, and then the material is used as an echo well, or as a resonator, as a tuning fork, as a tuner system, so that the information flow within the system can be rephased, reorganized. You can actually process information against information, which is very tricky, because it means that you're using an electromagnetic field to interact with an electromagnetic field, so that the resulting electromagnetic field is not only a calculation, but that the outcome of the calculation is a field of information, which adds a newness to what was there before. As I tend to compare it, it's like you have one loudspeaker and the other loudspeaker, and between them something new arises. And as I described in another text, it's like the synergy described by Roberto Renu. One individual and another individual, they create an interaction which is an overlap of their information field, their electromagnetic field, which becomes an entity in itself. It is that kind of principle which we see in our body, and we see that the cells interact in that manner. One cell is a CPU, and around it has an antenna field which is a radio field broadcasting information. The other cells have that too, and between cells the radio fields overlap, and in the overlap of the information field the material of the body is altered. There's much more to say to that story, but I need to bring up that part of the story, because that is where you can see that this activity of the living cell in processing information is a direct interaction in the tetrionic electromagnetic field, and the cells are thereby able to work with the quantum field, and they are able to work with the tetrions. They use the linear flow, they use the circular flow, and in combination the cells then have this, say, ongoing oscillation and interaction between what the cells does and what the electromagnetic field around the cell does. The information of the electromagnetic field around the cell is the specification of what the cell does locally for what the body does generally. In the cells, say this one part of the connection between all the cells is the DNA, which is as a tuning fork, basically linking all of the cells in the body to the same electromagnetic field. It is like the tuning knob of the radio, making sure that they are all on the same wavelength. But all of the cells then use that wavelength to interact and communicate with each other, and together they create the software program of the electromagnetic field, which they then use to produce the molecules and produce the body materials and produce the shape and the form of the structure of the body. We now come to the tricky bit of it all, because once you realize that cells are able to operate at the quantum level, that they work with nuclear atomic nuclear forces, that the cells actually reorganize atoms in the making of the molecules, and that the molecules that the cells make are very crucial and critical for the optimization of cell communication, then you can understand that the body that we have is a supercomputer. All of the cells in the body are a CPU, central processing unit. Every cell is able to calculate exactly what's going on. They take their decisions on what they do, when they do, and how they do it. And they use the information field around them to synchronize what they do with what's going on in the other cells. So thereby cells are able to make or transform molecules, which then go out into the body. They're taken in by other cells. They can recompute those molecules to form something else out of it. And then the cells are released, come back. And in that way, between the cells, there are cycles of molecules hovering up and down as a kind of messenger between the cells. as an essential part of the cell communication, and that molecular communication between the cells is, say, the physical level of the psychological communication of the associated electromagnetic radio field, which is carried by these molecules, but which also exists separate from those molecules. And that last bit is really very important. In the West and Western medicine, they look at the molecules and they forget that every molecule has an electromagnetic spectrum. Every molecule is composed of a series of atoms which around them have an antenna field. And by the overlap and the interlocking of the antenna field, there is a very specific signal or a chord or a melody in a photonic level which they entertain, maintain. So they are like code in the language of and the alphabet of the language that the cells use to communicate. But that communication of the cells is in part physical with the molecule, and in part it is physical. It is non-material, it's immaterial. So that is where we see this psychosomatic interaction at the cellular communication level. The psychic part is the quantum field, and the somatic part is the tetrionic aspect. And the cells weave between them and relate between them. They're like the zippers to convert information in matter, but also the other way around, to use matter to reorganize fields of information. And in doing so, they use the God principle. They redefine the interface between information and matter, and thereby reset the capacities and potentials of that boundary, of that cell, of that organ, of that body. So we have now come to a crucial point of understanding where we see that cells are the connectors between the quantum field and the tetrion fields, so that we can see that the cells are the mediator between information and matter. Cells do that by reorganizing the connection between atoms, which means that they reorganize the phase definition between atoms, and thus between molecules, and thus in matter. And the cells do that by resetting the charge that connects tetrions in the forming of atoms, or that resets the charges that connects atoms in forming molecules. But by changing the polarity of the interface between the atoms, or between the tetrions, or between the molecules, the cells then use this God principle, that they can generate, operate, and destroy the phase relationships that are involved. And they do that in an integrated manner, God. That is the level where the information and the matter are interconnected, interchangeable, and interoperative because of the cells being able to use that God principle. And the cells are able to connect information with matter and the other way around. They can bounce up and down between them. It's a bit as walking on two legs, walking in two different dimensions. One, the quantum field, which is non-material, and one, the material field of particles and things and objects. Now we come to the turning point of the story. We now know that cells use the cosmic information field so that they can work with the atomic energy, so that they can reorganize atoms in forming the body materials. But around us we have presently all kind of electromagnetic fields which are not natural and which are not compatible with the body. And some of those electromagnetic fields are so intense or so tense that they can actually interfere with what the cells are doing. To formulate it differently, the cells are using the linear flows and the circular flows of the quantum field in a very organized manner to reorganize atoms, to reform or transform molecules. But when you have a high tension voltage mast close to your house, which has a fixed vibration on it, then that pulsation is a bit like an earthquake at the frequency where those cells operate to. And as Dan Winters and others pointed out, if you have a 50 hertz cycle in your home, or if you have a 60 hertz cycle in your home, then the body cells and the body organs can no longer use that frequency, because that frequency has become like the bars of a prison. And you can compare that to riding your bicycle on a road and then entering a part of the road where there are tram rails. At the moment that you drive into the tram rails, and actually your bicycle wheel fits in a tram rail, then suddenly you can no longer correct your direction of your wheel. You're stuck into that tram rail, and as a result of not being able to correct the direction of your wheel, you will fall over. I think back of what I said about Bill Tiller and that crossing point of the electric wave and the magnetic wave. The closer you get to the crossing point, the more important it is that that crossing is in the right place. Yes, it can move around, but if it can no longer move around, something goes drastically wrong. If you can no longer steer your bicycle because you're caught in the tram rail, something goes wrong. And in the measurement of heart rate frequencies, there is something called the heart rate variability. Just as the electric wave and the magnetic wave in the light beam must be able to fluctuate a bit, likewise the heart in our body needs to fluctuate a bit. The frequency needs to go up and down, the amplitude needs to go up and down, so there's always an oscillation around a steady beat. But that variation is essential to connect what happens in the heart to what happens in the rest of the body. Measurements have been done that if the heart rate variability goes to zero, people have a perfectly stable heartbeat, then very often 10 minutes later that person is dead, because essentially they were caught in the tram rails, they can no longer navigate, they can no longer correct, they can no longer adapt, and that lack of adaptability essentially kills them. And that lack of adaptability is what arises when you have high tension power fields, when you have 5-5 frequencies, when you have mobile phone frequencies, when you have Bluetooth frequencies, when you have all kind of radio frequencies and all kind of radar frequencies. And in that sense, there are now so many antenna systems broadcasting radio waves with fixed frequencies that our body has less and less capacity to use those frequencies, because once it gets into those fixed frequencies, it can no longer attune and retune itself. And as a result, different parts of the electromagnetic supercomputer of our body can become disconnected. And of course, that means that the organ systems disconnect and that the organ functions disconnect. We call that disease, and that's the precursor of death. There are a couple of examples which can be mentioned of the kind of disturbances which exist nowadays in this electro pollution or the electro smog. And maybe it's easier if I first give the example of cancer. Cells in the body, they have a cell cycle. And one quarter of the cell cycle, one part of the cell cycle is the pause phase. That's where the cells wait, and doctors don't understand it, but electrical engineers and system theoreticians immediately understand that. That pause phase is where the cells wait for a synchronization pulse to connect to other cells in their system. Once they get that synchronization pulse, they re-kickstart their cycle. The cycle continues. It's a bit what we have in our heart. Our heart stops the blood so that it can start it again. And at the moment that the blood is stopped, then an electromagnetic pulse of the contraction of the heart muscles imprints an electromagnetic vector onto the blood, which gives the blood a electromagnetic direction which orients it towards a specific organ in the body. So that happens also at the cell cycle level. The pause phase makes it possible to maintain a coherence between the body cells. If there is too much electromagnetic noise, that's what's called electrosmog when it is around us, in our body is called acidification, too many loose electrons, then the cells have too much noise around the signal of that synchronization pulse, and they cannot synchronize very well. Acidity is one of the foundations of the origination of cancer. Another problem in cells is that information is stored in the body in circulations, in circuits, in cycles, in say an eddy current. And as Rieke Geert Hamer pointed out, many others did as well, memory storage is a bit like what you see in a computer. It is stored in a memory loop. And traumatic memories are likewise stored in a localized circulation in the body, most specifically associated with the organ which is related to the kind of interaction associated with that specific form of trauma. And so the trauma then induces a reverberation, basically a shock experience is stored in the body as a circulation, as a cycle, as a loop. And that loop is caught in a specific area in the body, and the cells in that loop are operated by a bias. There is an electrical current which is running around them, but that electrical current around them of that traumatic memory is a charge which makes it difficult for them to synchronize their activity between them. So one of the foundations of the origin of cancer is a traumatic experience in the specific organ area, as a result of which those cells can no longer synchronize. So we now have two causes of the origination of cancer. One is, say, a hyperelectric atmosphere. The body around is too ionized. It's called acidic. And the other is that there is a local memory current, as in a computer, and that current forces a kind of circulation, forces a kind of frequency on the cells which interferes with that cell communication system. There's a third level of disturbance which has to do with actually the charge polarity of the body in the environment, and that is at a level where people lose their identity and have the experience of being overruled by their environment. In cancer therapy, homeopathy, it's called carcinosin. Those are the people who are too impressionable and too easily do what other people around them suggest or indicate. Which means that the identity of that individual is too weak, and their body doesn't really know who it's working for, because these people, it's called pleaser type, keep on doing what others ask of them. So their body in that way has become a servo robot or a slave system to whatever the other people communicate. And that switching between self and others creates an instability, which again also interferes with that cell communication. So the way to get rid of the cancer is to get rid of that identity disorder, that people can regain their own stable self, that they can get rid of their trauma. You need to do those things together. And that they can also get rid of the body acidity. You need to do those things together. And that they also need to refuel the cells with the kind of food the cells need, because there are materials which help stabilize the electromagnetic field of the body. There's something which I need to add to this story, because a lot of this work on cancer was already known by the researchers of Royal Raymond Rife. He was an endocrinologist, but also learned how to make lenses in the Zeiss factory in Germany. And he realized that what he knew from the working of light in lenses and the working of light and the interaction of light fields also worked in the body. And he was actually able to use lenses and the coating of lenses in such a way that he could dynamically oscillate the light in the lens against itself. He could use the interference of the light in the lens to actually change the characteristics of the lens. It's a bit like what happens in the body when the electromagnetic field changes the quality of the body materials. But in this case, he was able to use the lens in such a way that he could look into the ultraviolet spectrum. And as a result, he was able to see that in cancer tissues, there were very often virus structures. But because of the accuracy of his microscope, basically a million times thereabouts, he could measure the size of the virus structure, and as a result he could do the same as what is attributed to Caruso, the singer, that he would rub the wine glass and then sing the exact tone of the wine glass, and you could say that the wine glass was so happy in being recognized that it burst out of itself by joy. And in that same way, the Royal Raymond Rife was able to measure the resonance frequency of the virus and use radio lamps of that precise frequency, as a result of which, like the glass of Caruso, he could shatter the virus. And in that manner, at light speed, he could get rid of the virus in the cancer structures, and he would discover that the cancers would ungrow. There's a whole story around his work and how he was actually vilified for being able to dissolve cancers, because of course cancer is an enormous part of an industry. I'm just referring to this because it's one of the examples where you can see that the electromagnetic effects in the body are actually decisive and determinant for what happens within the body. So combine this understanding of the work of Royal Raymond Rife with the work of the healing of cancer as described before, then you can see that there is this whole electromagnetic level of the body, and that actually it is a software in the body which determines the relationship between the body cells and the integrity of the communication between the body cells. And that's where we can come to the conclusion of this story, because we now have the understanding that the whole universe is electromagnetic in nature, which is immaterial. By the understanding of tetrionics, we can understand how matter is part of that electromagnetic field, and that it is actually formed and moved by the electromagnetic field. But from there we can also see how in the body the cells are able to work with this interplay between information and matter, and actually actively use that I-God principle to switch between information and matter, to create matter to work with the information differently, to change the information to work with the matter differently, and so on. They are really juggling between physics and phasics. But that for that juggling, they need information so that they can attune what they do locally with what happens with the in the cells in the body in general. And then of course we come to the other side of the story, that when people create electromagnetic fields around us which interfere with that, that's why I needed the example of the cancer, and when they actually destructively interfere with that, that is where I brought in this example of Royal Raymond Rife using radio frequencies to eliminate a virus. If you don't know what you're doing, these electromagnetic frequencies will shake and rattle and disrupt parts of the body cells and part of the body cell communication, as a result of which the body fragments. from the electromagnetic level, because the electromagnetic field integrity is lost. That is why I needed to refer to the work of Bill Tiller. And as a result, the relationship between information and force in the body is lost. That is what Nikola Tesla was already exploring. And let me just give another part of that story, which is the work of Björn Nordenström. He was a radiologist, and he realized that around cancers there is a kind of corona. He researched that and discovered that the water and the fat around cancers was organized. He researched further and found that the organized structure of the water and fat around the cancer came from a radio electromagnetic field in the cancer. And he also discovered that if he put an electrode in the cancer and one outside of the cancer, that the charge difference between the inside and the outside of the cancer was nullified, and that the cancer ungrew. That's another example of how the body is essentially a supercomputer working with electromagnetic fields. I need one more element in the story of the electricity and the toxic side of it, because all of this, what I described, is known. I just found it in places, I just put it together, I looked for the connections and discovered that all of it is connected by the principle of the tetrionic electromagnetic field, which drives the materials of the tetrions. Our cells can do that. Natural electromagnetic fields help optimize that. But the electromagnetic radio fields of created by people don't do that. That is in part because people ignored how the Maxwell equations are different from Heaviside equations, and as you have in the side effect of drugs, there you can see that in the body other things play along than you have in the reaction tube in the laboratory. Likewise, in the creation of electromagnetic fields, when you ignore the components of the Maxwell equations, then you do not see that there are subtle but very, very important other components of the field which you need to take into account. If you don't, you get a lot of side effects in the body, and a lot of the diseases which we found nowadays, leukemias in children of which the schools are under high voltage lines, cancers in students living in the room in front of the radio, the mobile phone radio mast, and so on. And then you can see that there is a difficulty in that gap of understanding in the difference between the Maxwell equations and the Heaviside equations. So there are a lot of electromagnetic signals and patterns being created at the moment which are not compatible, not computable by the human body cells. And think of radar frequencies, think of mobile phone masts, think of Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, but also think of the television screens, the LCD screens. Because a television screen is a liquid crystal, just as we find the liquid crystals in our body. The liquid crystal is pulsed with a fixed frequency, and superimposed on it is a flicker frequency of the signal of the changing image of the picture on the screen. But the LCD screen as a whole operates as a radar station. There is an electromagnetic frequency over a very large surface pulsed in a very coherent manner, but does our body understand it? How does it interfere with the body? Is it just another tram rail system for the body? Most of these things, yes. A lot of the debate which is going on at the moment about the mobile phone masts, where they go from 2G to 3G to 4G to 5G and ultimately 6G, is that they shorten the frequencies of the radar, of the radio system, but that means that the wavelength becomes shorter and shorter, the frequency goes higher and higher, but that means that it gets closer and closer to the core of the cell. The wavelength is the measure of the scale of what is responding to it in the body. So, for example, Phil Callahan said that the telepathy wavelength is around 11 centimeter. But at the moment that you have centimeter wavelength or millimeter wavelength or micromillimeter wavelength by these new electronic technologies, that means that it's not just the organ starting to resonate, but it's the cell starting to resonate. And of course, you know that we have more cells than we have organs. But also microbes and viruses that start to resonate, and they actually live off frequencies. The microbes better like the infrared, the virus better likes the ultraviolet. And so there is a whole metabolism of different cells and organisms in us which thrives off the electromagnetic fields. But if suddenly there are electromagnetic fields of 3G, 4G, 5G signal stations, then there's a lot of radiation that your body can no longer escape. And in fact, one of the definitions of cancer is that cells experience an inescapable irritation. So in all of these wavelengths around us, we discover that there's not just more and more radio masts, but that more and more of those radio masts are starting to be synchronized. And this is where you need to understand the HARP radio station in Alaska. And there are a couple, there's one in Norway, there's a couple in Russia. And these are radio stations where antenna are being used to pulse electromagnetic frequencies into the ionosphere. They bounce back there, they can be directed over the Earth, depending on how you tune the phase frequencies and which antenna you pulse first. Then first you have this antenna, then the one next to it, then the one next to it, so you can actually direct the beams of the electromagnetic radiation around in the ionosphere. And as a result, you can use energy beams around the planet. And again, refer to the work of Joseph Farrell, who said that the pyramid of Cheops was actually already doing that kind of stuff. The HARP antenna is a very large antenna array, and it's said to use as much electricity as you could use for a quite fair-sized city. But these mobile phone masts are just as many antenna masts broadcasting just as many electromagnetic waves. And there are two parts to that story. The one part is that you would have a radio mast near you sending a signal to you. Well, as you know, in finding where you are, there are already three masts that know where you are. So there are three masts that are interacting with you. But all these other masts are part of the same system, and had evidently people can use that system, but they can also abuse that system by pulsing all of these antenna in that whole network of mobile phone telephone mast in the same rhythm or in a directed rhythm, so that the telephone masts which we have now can actually together operate in the same manner as a HARP system, and actually together they form a HARP system. Actually, HARP is called spelled H-A-A-R-P, the High Amplitude Aurora Research Project. So in that sense, electricity around us has become in a way unavoidable, inescapable. That can be very threatening, and actually it is very threatening, and there are people who have looked into abuse on that, and yes, you can find patterns on the use of electromagnetic radiation to implant thoughts into people. You can find patterns on electromagnetic frequencies to radiate people, to actually burn their skin, and there are weapons based on that. So the difference between the electromagnetic technology and electromagnetic weaponry is getting very small. And the only way to get out of it is to realize that we need to go from a philosophy of warfare to a philosophy of healing, and that we need to go from a philosophy of competition to a philosophy of symbiosis, that we can actually help each other more by generosity and sharing than by doing the opposite, robbing out of greed. That's a mindset. And so to close off the story, I want to bring it down to a fundamental issue, which is that yes, we have all these pulsed electromagnetic frequencies around them. Some are directed, some are fixed, some are whatever you can find about the principle of electricity, we found it around us. And yes, some of these fields are much stronger than that what we find in our body. But never forget that the cells in our body are highly powerful. They work with atomic nuclear forces, and they are highly intelligent. They're all connected in the communication and in their joint thinking process. And that is where you then find that the techniques of meditation, which is not just the stilling of the mind within, so that all of the thought process that you're doing can sort of go out of the picture, as a result of which the cells can resume the coherence of their communication. But by increasing the coherence of their communication, they are also able to retune the frequency field within them, and they can actually also induced and create a cancellation of electromagnetic fields around. Compare that to you living in an environment where there is a ticking clock, and your mind, brain and nervous system is able to actually cancel out the sensation of the ticking of that clock. So in order to do that, you need to restore the integrity of your own body, which means that you go from conscious to subconscious to unconscious to out of conscious, because at the out of conscious level you are then working with the cellular communication itself. Evidently that's not in the kind of language that we think in. It's, let's say, assembler code language of our supercomputer, the body. And what you then need to learn is to shift your attention from the environment and the sensory perception to what happens in your body. You need to learn to feel and sense how the signals in your body are different from what happens around you. That strengthens your body awareness, that strengthens your self-awareness, that strengthens your identity, which also strengthens your integrity. When you go to one level deeper, you go from the body level of the alpha brainwave to the organ level of the theta brainwaves, then you're actually able to orient how you relate to the environment, because that's what the organs do in operating the I-God principle. At the theta level, you're then able to see how the organs have different vector directions and how they interact with the environment in a different way, but also they interact with each other. And together they form one system. The hypermandala or the hyperbull of Roberto Renu shows that. It's called the chakra system, it's called the zodiac, it's called the five element cycle of the Chinese medicine. There is a logic by which all of these organs relate to each other, while together, all of them, they define how you relate to the environment, the I-God principle. So once you are aware how that works at the theta brainwave frequency levels, how you are able to navigate your emotions and reset, recalibrate your emotions, eliminate your emotions, stuff like that, then you can actually get into that cellular level. And at the cellular level, your cells are actually the universe in inverse. So whatever happens in the universe, your cells connected to the universe have a way to see how all of it connects. That's where you are in the God awareness, as Michael Pirsig and others said. That's where the God consciousness comes into the picture, and what you know is basically what goes on everywhere. And that is where then people can function differently. And yes, there will come a time that people stop thinking in this military mindset and they go to a healing mindset. That's where all of these radio antennas then will be tuned in such a way that they are harmonic, they are biocompatible, and that they will actually be recalibrated in such a way that they create a, say, a harmonic resonant oscillator around us, which actually is like a musical environment or an aurora light field, which is stimulating for our body and for our mind and for the consciousness of humanity. So that then is the two-sided part of the story. On the one side, it is really wonderful, interesting field of electricity, understanding how the electromagnetic field and the tetrion field create everything material that we perceive, and actually defines how that is formed and how that is moved. On the other hand, we can see in our body how our body cells work with that, and evidently from our body cells we can learn who we can actively understand the coherence of these electromagnetic fields in the body as a kind of musical symphony, which is that project Math and Music, which I discussed elsewhere. And then we can see that that notion of music and symphony, which is the essence of the electromagnetic communication between the cells, we can also use around us by what would be called biomimicry, learning from the body, in optimizing and organizing those electromagnetic fields around us.